searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Dave's not here.
Good morning and welcome into this Friday edition of The Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Wishing you a happy Friday. Yes, the weekend is upon us. You don't have to stand on your tiptoes to see it in the distance. You don't have to take an experimental whiff to see if you can smell it. It's right here. We get through work today, and we've got a couple of days to chill, to unplug, to take it easy, to rinse out our brains and prepare for the upcoming Monday. And that's what we're standing on the brink of right now. Hello there. How are you? I hope you're doing well. I hope things are good in your neighborhood. It is stormy in our neighborhood. We are looking at some pretty nasty weather. They're warning us that it could get very bumpy for us here in the heart of the sunny Southland here in Alabama today. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. But it's supposed to be kind of nice tomorrow. So hopefully we'll get all of the bumpy stuff over with. It is a Friday edition of the podcast. It's Friday, January 10th, 2020. And there's so much to talk about. You know, I one of the things I mention is that we touch absurdity here. And we do. And I was looking through my list of stories to pay attention to today, and so many of them fall into that category that the absurdity factor is pretty thick. And even when you're dealing with Iran and shooting down an airliner, there is absurdity involved. The fact that they expect the world to believe what they're saying about this airline, this airliner from Ukraine, which went down. They're saying the engine was on fire before this all happened, that the proof is that the pilot turned around and was, you know, well, now we have video of an explosion. Now we have intel from not only U.S. sources, but Canada is also saying the same thing. Other nations are beginning to come in line and say, yeah, we've looked at the information and Iran did it. And yet they're expecting us to believe. They didn't. That's just part of it. We'll look at the Iran story in a little bit more detail coming up in the next segment. But first, let's start off with a few things that are just patently, as far as I'm concerned, ridiculous. You might have heard, you've heard of Paul Krugman, right? He is an economics professor at the Graduate Center of the City of University of New York and a New York Times columnist. He feels compelled to tell everyone in the world from time to time how evil Trump is and how wrong Trump is about everything. The problem is Mr. Krugman tends to be wrong every time. He's not getting anything right. As an economist and someone who teaches economics, you would think they would like to see a little proof that he knows what he's talking about. Unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately for him, they don't require him to. Because his track record is really abysmal. Well, Mr. Krugman is claiming that his IP address has been compromised. And somebody's been using it to download kiddie porn. Child pornography. He tweeted about it. He speculated it could be an attempt to QAnon me. Oh, wow. Talk about your conspiracy theorists. Yee. QAnon's a popular movement on many online message boards. It believes an anonymous government insider known as Q is secretly leaking details of a secret plot between the deep state and President Trump and his supporters. Krugman posted this statement to Twitter. He says, "Well, I'm on the phone with my computer security service, and as I understand it, someone compromised my IP address and is using it to download child pornography. I might just be a random target, but this could be an attempt to QAnon me. It's an ugly world out there." The term IP address is an abbreviation for Internet Protocol address. It identifies a computer that's connected to the Internet, also tracking the location of websites that a person visits. So it works like a return address to a computer, showing where it requests for websites where requests for websites originate. Computer hackers break into a system to steal, change, or destroy information. They may use a fake IP address to disguise their activities and multiply their connections when mounting a denial of service attack on websites. Well, okay, yeah. All of the tech nerdiness aside, this is one of two things going on. Either Mr. Krugman has been caught doing something he really has no business doing, naughty boy, or he is the victim of a scam. And I will tell you this, there is a scam. It's a relatively, I guess in the last 6 to 8 months or so, it's something that's popped up, and it's not the first time it's popped up, but recently it's come back up again, where you get an email, and the email quotes back to you your IP address and some information that can be found by looking at your IP address info, and then threatens you and tells you it's going to publicize the fact that you've been doing things online you shouldn't be doing. Now, you could be Mother Teresa and still get this email. You could. It's happened to people I know. It's happened to me. But I sat and looked at it and thought, wait a minute. This is not right. And then I did a little bit of checking online. I went to DuckDuckGo because I don't use Google. I went to DuckDuckGo, did a little quick search and found out, oh yeah, this is a scam. That there are people out there who will threaten you to see if they can get anything out of you. And usually they want money. Send us money, or we'll reveal to the world what a sick, twisted puppy you are. And they send these emails to pretty much anyone. So Mr. Krugman is probably the victim of an internet email scam, and he's unaware of it. That's my take on it. At least that's the way I see it. Then again, he is a leftist. He is a progressive. He could actually be guilty. Speaking of leftism and liberals, over at CNN, they're saying that national park signs are being changed out now. Why does this matter? Well, these particular signs are warning signs telling people that the glaciers are going to be gone by the year 2020. CNN published a January 7th story headlined, Glacier National Park is replacing signs that predicted its glaciers would be gone by 2020, and admitted that in 2017, the park was told by the agency, the U.S. Geological Survey, that the complete melting of all of the glaciers, the melting off of the glaciers, was no longer expected to take place so quickly due to changes in the forecast model. In other words, what they so deeply fear ain't happening. The signs were put up over a decade ago, according to CNN, but this news didn't stop CNN from continuing to bang away on their climate change gloom and doom narrative. They immediately tried to qualify their own reporting in a subsection midway through the piece headlined, Humans are responsible, scientist says. Really, CNN? CNN proceeded to cite a 2017 study from the same agency, the USGS, in an attempt to salvage their liberal talking points. Quote, in several decades, glaciers, will be mostly gone. They will grow so small that they will disappear. They will certainly be gone before the end of the century. That's what Dan Fagre, the study's lead scientist, said. And humans are responsible, he said after the study's release. The CNN proceeded to note that the park isn't a unique case. Glaciers are shrinking across the globe, experts say. Do they just use the phrase experts say tongue-in-cheek at this point? Do they really? They cited Iceland as an example. Quote, in Iceland, researchers bid farewell to the first glacier in this country lost to climate change. In a funeral-like gathering, scientists memorialized the glacier, known as OK, or OK, with a plaque that read, Auk is the first Icelandic glacier to lose its status as a glacier. In the next 200 years, all our glaciers are expected to follow the same path. Well, this is propaganda. It's not news. Meteorologist and climate researcher Dr. Roy Spencer cast doubt on the man-made climate change scenario in response to the question on his website, which is, isn't the melting of Arctic sea ice evidence of warming? His answer? Warming, yes. Man-made warming, no. Arctic sea ice naturally melts back every summer, but that meltback was observed to reach a peak in 2007. But we have a relatively accurate satellite-based measurements of Arctic and Antarctic sea ice only since 1979. It's entirely possible that late summer Arctic ice cover was just as low in the 1920s or 1930s. That's a period when Arctic thermometer data suggests it was just as warm. But if you're CNN, you'd just be looking to push one side of the story. That's the climate alarmist side. Even when your own reporting undercuts your preferred position. See, the thing is, we don't have the data to support what they're saying, that this is a unique occurrence. There is a distinct and very real possibility that this has happened before, and possibly even to a greater degree. We know that heating and cooling of the planet happens in cycles. We also know that the same heating and cooling is happening where another place we can measure heating and cooling, Mars. And there's nobody on Mars to disrupt the ecology and to mess with the atmosphere. So it's not us. It's solar activity. That's what it boils down to. Oh, in a similar story in San Francisco, you remember California came for the straws. They came for the disposable water bottles. Now in San Francisco, the same city inundated by public poop and urine are banning paper to-go cups in an effort to save the city from environmental apocalypse. According to Fox Business, a growing number of coffee houses in San Francisco are banishing paper to-go cups and replacing them with everything from glass jars to rental mugs and BYO cup policies. What started as a small trend among neighborhood cafes to reduce waste is gaining support from some big names in the city's food and coffee world. The restaurant, one restaurant called Atelier Cren, is going to abandon using to-go bags or disposable coffee cups next year. The Blue Bottle Coffee House chain, they use 15,000 to-go cups a month at their 70 U.S. locations. They said they'll show their guests and the world they can eliminate disposable cups. Starbucks has plans to test recyclable cups next year in San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Vancouver, and London. I can't wait for the stories of them melting in people's hands. Can you? That'll be fun. Or them tasting really, really bad. Or them having a really strange, odd texture that people don't like. That tends to be how this stuff goes. I know that from the paper straws thing when it first started. In July 2018, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors revealed they were considering banning plastic straws. Newsmax reported the legislation prohibited eateries from using plastic anti-splashers, stirrers, other plastic items that environmentalists say are too small to be recycled properly. Retailers would no longer be able to sell the items starting in July 2019. In addition, food and drink vendors would be allowed to dispense cutlery, napkins, condiments, and lids only on request or through self-serve stations. So, the city on a hill, the beautiful city of San Francisco, I've been there. I was back before everything started smelling so bad, but I've been there. It was at that time a beautiful place. I don't have any desire to go back now. I once wanted to go back and see it when I had some time because I got to spend like half a day there when I was there. But I'd like to go back and, if possible, in a clean city, stay for a few days and explore because it's gorgeous. But now, people pooping and peeing on the streets, crazy people saying, no, you can't have a straw. Sorry, no plastic straws. No, I'm sorry, I can't give you a to-go cup. Did you bring anything we could put your coffee in? This is nutty. This is crazy. But this is leftism, liberalism, progressivism. It's very, very progressive. Very progressive. We're going to eliminate the convenience of paper cups. Wow. Yeah, that'll save the planet. God love them. Every time this happens, things don't get better. It just gets more inconvenient. It gets worse in some way. And we find eventually, every time we find that what is being done isn't making one iota of difference. Not a bit. We find out, in fact, in some way, the measures being taken are making matters worse. It remains to be seen if this actually goes nationwide. But you can be sure, progressives everywhere will be preaching its virtues.
Bunch of crap.
Oh, wow. Referring back to California legislation, what a bunch of crap. I guess that applies directly to San Francisco, doesn't it? And LA today. Yikes. We were planning my wife and I are trying to plan a vacation, and I've mentioned it before, but one of the places we talked about going was back to the LA area, Southern California. We've talked about going back to San Francisco. We've kind of written San Francisco off completely. At least Southern California has some things to go look at. You can go to San Diego and go to SeaWorld and places like that. And then there's Disneyland just outside of L.A. And I say just outside of L.A. If you get on the interstate, you get on the freeway and you drive around, you wouldn't think so. It looks like one big city is what it looks like. You know, the Star Wars movies, the prequels that had the planet Coruscant that was one huge city. That's kind of what L.A. looks like. If you've never been there, trust me, you haven't missed much. You really, except for the nostalgia factor. If you go to L.A., the movie industry is in that area, and the downtown Hollywood is kind of cool as far as nostalgia for the movies is concerned. And as long as you don't wander beyond a certain number of blocks, because it starts getting really dicey outside of the main tourist area. In fact, we were warned when we were there, don't go any further than that traffic light that way and that traffic light that way, because it gets really sketchy beyond there. In other words, you could get mugged. So it's as far as nostalgia, as I said, the movie industry and the like, it's pretty cool. But otherwise, they're making some pretty bad plans. One of the bad plans has been this pro-worker law. Gavin Newsom, the governor, signed the law. It's AB5. It's a bill that upends the gig economy, contract-based employment in California. That's people like Uber drivers and Lyft drivers and the like. And in this article from heritage.org, it's an article by Rachel Gresler called California's Pro-Worker Law is Killing Jobs Left and Right. It's just more absurdity. If you want less of something, raise its price. That's the logic behind policies such as cigarette and soda taxes and plastic bag fees. Somehow policymakers in California thought that by raising the cost of doing business with independent workers, they could make all those workers better off. But now, instead of higher benefits and improved job protections, many independent workers are losing their jobs, along with the flexibility and autonomy they value. In September, the California legislature passed and Governor Gavin Newsom signed into law AB5, a bill that upends the gig economy and contract-based employment in California. With a little more than 10% of workers engaged in independent work as their primary job, and as many as 1 in 3 workers participating in independent work on some level, California's law could affect anywhere from 1 to 5 million people, not including its inconsistent exemptions. By applying a three-part ABC test that forces companies to treat many individuals they simply do business or contract with as formal employees, the California law is causing havoc for many companies, and particularly for independent workers, at least those that didn't receive a special exemption under the law. Small employers will be hardest hit, because they rely more heavily on contractors. Businesses that have four or fewer employers use 6.7 contractors on average. Think about that. They use outside contractors, tiny businesses, small businesses, which is really the lifeblood of the economy of America. In California, they use outside contractors to do work because it's more economical, it's more efficient for them. Imagine a small landscape company, 3 employees, contracts with half a dozen others for services like tree removal, stone work, installing sprinklers. Under this new law, those contract workers would have to become formal employees, meaning the owner would be in charge of the work they perform, even though he's not an expert in their services, and how many hours they work, would have to provide them with employee benefits. Since that's probably not feasible or advantageous, the owner would instead have to cut ties with those contractors and stop offering their services. That'll make it harder for him to compete with bigger companies who can fully and formally employ more specialized workers. Even if big companies like Uber might be able to remain profitable by treating workers as employees, drivers and customers will pay a price. Uber's challenging the law in court. But if it and other gig platforms can't negotiate or litigate their way out of AB5, they presumably will have to take away the autonomy and flexibility that draw workers to the gig economy. For rideshare companies, drivers likely would be assigned prescribed shifts and locations. They could be required to pick up certain passengers. They would need to request time off in advance. And they might be forced to work exclusively for one company. These companies could also decide that the increased liability of formal employment means they need to monitor workers by video to ensure control over their employees' workplaces and performance. And gig economy customers can count on steep price hikes, which will reduce demand and lead to even fewer jobs and services. Let's stay with just this ride-sharing situation for just a moment before we move any further, if we move any further. I was talking with my son, Joe, when he was visiting, about Uber and Lyft. He lives in New Orleans, and Uber and Lyft are big in New Orleans. Big, big, big. In fact, the taxi companies are suffering. They're taking a huge hit. And I told him that I thought it was entirely likely that the taxi companies are behind this kind of legislation that's popped up in California in some way. When you think about it, these taxi companies have both done favors and received favors in the political realm for the sake of doing business in cities. And when a company like Uber comes along and people can offer others a ride in a clean, well-maintained vehicle that doesn't smell like the aftermath of a night of drinking and is not falling apart, and the person driving is clean and isn't constantly on their telephone talking to somebody else in a language you don't understand, and you can actually pull your smartphone out of your pocket or purse, arrange a ride, pay for the ride, and then afterwards, depending on how nice or not nice the person was, you can tip or not tip. You can, on your phone, in the palm of your hand, you can praise the driver or critique the driver. That service has much, much, much more appeal to the average consumer than the average taxi service. And the taxi services are hurt as a result of it, including the fact that the price is a lot lower. So it would seem to me that if you dig deep enough, you'll probably find taxi companies and the politicians they own have their hands in this kind of legislation. Now, independent truck drivers are also hit hard by the law. I don't know if you know any, but I know independent truckers. According to the California Trucking Association, which filed a lawsuit against the state in November, AB 5 will be putting 70,000 owner-operator truckers out of work. These guys and gals who own their own rigs and they take contracts to haul loads across the country. 70,000 of them living in California will be bumped out of work because of this legislation. Independent truckers like Brian Gray, they've already packed up their families and moved out of California. And others like Jeff and Elise Fink, they're narrowing their relocation options even now. Jeff Fink said, as of January 1, I was told the company can't dispatch me with loads leaving California if we still want to work for the company. These drivers don't want to leave the state, but they've invested in their trucks, and those investments won't pay off under the law as it is written. Fortunately, this group has been granted at least a temporary reprieve on December 31st when a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order against the law's application to independent truckers. A hearing considering a permanent injunction for truckers is set for just a few days from now, Monday, January 13th. Freelance writers and photographers are also suing California over AB 5. The Pacific Legal Foundation is representing them in their argument that the law unconstitutionally restricts free speech and media. The groups also argue that the law's unequal application deprives certain groups of equal representation. For example, juice drivers, journalists, and photographers are subject to AB 5, but milk drivers, grant writers, and fine artists are exempt. They also argue that AB 5 strips freelancers of their ownership rights, because formal employment usually requires these professionals to give ownership of their work over to their employer. Think about that. In an economy in California, specifically in Southern California, where creativity, the creative business, the movie business, employs a lot of people via contract who write for movies and television. They're not employees of a studio or of a television production company. They're freelancers, and they write for many. And this law is hurting them. But this is typical of progressive government. It sets out to help, and as a result, it hurts many more than it helps. It's always short-sighted and only values the control it gains.
What are you, turning into some kind of feminist?
I think not. Hey, about that previous story, the pro-worker law in California, New York's considering the same legislation. So the insane areas of our country, the progressive coastal areas, the large cities, they think the same way. They don't think through. They don't understand the damage they do by over-regulation. It's just typical progressive behavior. The same thing will happen in New York. They will be driving people. They're already driving people away. The taxation is. And that's happening in California now, where they're moving away to places where things are more sane, like California. Unfortunately, we're seeing where progressives flee to. They tend to vote for the same stupidity that made them leave where they were before. Go figure. I was watching Mock and Daisy, Chicks on the Right, this morning. They do a live Facebook thing every morning. And I was watching their live Facebook feed this morning, and they were talking about, hey, don't move to Texas. We don't want you messing Texas up. Well, they're not in Texas. They're in Indianapolis. But one of them has a retirement property in Texas. And when she retires, she wants Texas to still be sane. And I don't blame her. I feel the same way. Learn your lessons. Don't repeat the same behavior that got you in trouble before, which is exactly what will happen. And we're seeing it happen. And people are moving to more Democrat-controlled, progressive-type areas. They're going to places like Houston and other cities like Austin. And they're camping out there and thinking, wow, life is great here. The taxes are lower. There are liberals everywhere. This is cool. But the problem is that the longer they're there, the more likely they are to vote for the same kind of politicians who gave them the problems they ran away from. They just don't understand. They just don't get it. And these are the people who ask us to trust them. Go figure. Okay, we need to move along here. I can't ignore the Iran story anymore. Iran is reportedly now inviting Boeing to help investigate the crash of the airliner. And they're blaming the United States for a psych operation, which is weird. This is coming from FoxNews.com. Iran reportedly changed course today, invited Boeing, a U.S.-based company, to help in its investigation into the Ukrainian jetliner that crashed in Tehran a day earlier. A day earlier, Tehran said it would refuse to include the aerospace giant in its probe that has drawn international attention and widespread speculation that a missile caused the crash and killed the 176 people aboard. And I would say it's probably beyond speculation now, with more than one country, two and more countries joining on, saying intelligence is saying there was a missile. Iran also slammed the U.S. for its psychological operation around the cause of the crash that it says only adds salt to the injuries of the family members of those who perished. Like they cared when somebody flipped the switch and sent that missile flying. Ali Rabi, the spokesperson for Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's administration, reportedly said officials from Ukraine, Boeing, and France were welcome to join Iran's Accident Investigation Committee. Ukraine owned the plane. Boeing manufactured the aircraft. France built its engine. Rabi said, we advise the U.S. government to wait for the results of the Accident Investigation Committee of the Ukrainian plane crash instead of spreading lies and carrying out their psychological operation. It's unfortunate that the U.S. government and its conscious or unaware companions add salt to the injury of families of the victims in the Iran plane crash by spreading lies and are ready to sacrifice the families of the victims to serve their own goals. Wow. That's interesting. Abbas Mousavi, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, also told IRNA news agency today that Iran, quote, has invited both Ukraine and the Boeing company to participate in the investigations. The report came after the Pentagon and other Western leaders Thursday said intelligence suggested the Ukrainian International Airlines flight was shot down by an Iranian anti-aircraft missile. The crash happened hours after Iran launched more than a dozen ballistic missiles, targeting two military bases housing American and coalition troops. That attack wasn't retaliation for the U.S. airstrike that killed Iranian Quds Force General Qasem Soleimani near Baghdad International Airport last week. Let's just clarify, the airstrike that killed the Iranian terrorist, Qasem Soleimani. Iran previously said yesterday it would not hand over the plane's black box to Boeing, which is an American company, or U.S. authorities for analysis. They still haven't said they're going to surrender the black box. All they've said is they're inviting Boeing and others to come look at things and help them investigate. They still haven't said they're going to let them look at the black box. This will be very interesting. And it will make me wonder, it makes me wonder how long it will be before anyone, if ever, will get an opportunity to look at the data in the flight recorder. Will they ever get a chance? Will they ever? I doubt it. And the only reason I strongly suspect, and my gut is usually right, I strongly suspect that the only reason they're doing this now is because of the international blowback they're receiving. When they said, no, we're not going to let anybody inspect the black box, the whole world raised an eyebrow and said, oh, well, this is clearer. Of course they don't want anybody inspecting the data from the flight recorder. Of course they don't. Because that will reveal that there was nothing mechanically wrong with the plane. It will reveal that their claim that there was a fire is a lie. It will reveal everything they're saying about this is a lie. And that they did indeed shoot this plane down. Some are trying to be magnanimous and saying, oh, it was a mistake. Somebody pulled a trigger by mistake, or somebody gave the order by mistake. Somebody shot it down. This was all a mistake. They're trying to be magnanimous. I won't give them that much grace. I just won't. because this was a Ukrainian airline, there is a possibility of sucking Russia into the situation. I mean, stop and think about all of the people, all of the countries involved. The Ukraine airliner, Ukraine is at odds with Russia. America is at odds with Iran. Someone could very well have given the order and said, let's shoot down a Ukrainian plane when it leaves in order to get everybody riled up and the focus off of us. It's a bizarre twist, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. You have to remember who we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with sane people. We're dealing with demented people who have a goal of ruling the world. And speaking of demented people, did you see Sheila Jackson Lee making a speech the other day, addressing the press? Now, Sheila Jackson Lee, she's demented enough. But did you see what was going on behind her? Wednesday, Democrat Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee was joined by her Democrat colleagues for a press conference. They discussed the congressional use of military force and the American casualties of the Iraq War. People noticed Ilhan Omar in the background, laughing and joking around with her colleagues as Sheila Jackson Lee discussed U.S. casualties in Iraq. Jackson Lee stood behind the podium and said, I'm very glad to say I was part of the 132 and also the vote for Representative Barbara Lee's amendment, but I think that the point of that is that this is the time. This is the same war that we're dealing with today. She's before noting more than 4,400 American troops died during this conflict. She goes on to say, we never solved any problems with AUMF, the authorization for use of military force. We left 4,000 plus, maybe even 4,400 dead and over 60,000 who came back injured for some. But this is all inconsequential. What's consequential is the behavior that was going on behind her. Ilhan Omar, laughing, giggling, smiling, while someone at the microphone, just a matter of a few feet from her, is talking about American soldiers dying. And then Omar has the nerve to tell the press that she has PTSD, and the president aggravates it. The president gives her such anxiety. This disgusting anti-Semite, who is only in office because she represents a district which is populated overwhelmingly by Somali refugees. She has no love for America, but she does love power. Okay, then, it is the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Thank you for joining. Hey, thanks for subscribing. If you subscribe to the podcast, I appreciate it. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast and you're kind of a casual listener, go ahead and get signed up. Have it hand-delivered, so to speak, to your mobile device every day, Monday through Friday. It's easy. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's on Google Podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on the iHeartRadio app. A lot of people have that, and a lot of people also have the TuneIn Radio app. You can find it there as well. And you can also go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. That's Daily Perspective Podcast. Run it all together, all one word, .com, and you'll find a place there. You can get signed up. So sign up today and have it delivered to your mobile device and just get the podcast every day. You can also join on Facebook Live. I worked out the bugs and Facebook Live is up and running. That's when I record it live every day. It's because of all the time, all the years I spent doing radio shows. The I'm so used to doing things live instead of a pre-recorded situation where you go back and tweak and edit. And I don't do that. I do a live program. I record it. I put it out as a podcast. And it just made more sense for me to do it that way. And that's why there are breaks with public service announcements in the breaks. Podcast subscribers don't get the breaks. You get the bumper music going in and out, but all of those PSAs, they're not there. But I run everything like a regular radio show. It runs for an hour, Monday through Friday mornings at 8 Central. And I take the results and put it out as a podcast, usually within half an hour of me finishing up. And I'm working on a way to do that even faster. And we'll see if that pans out. We're almost through. We're diving into the final segment. Before I move forward, I want to go back to the story about the Iran airliner. I don't know if you've noticed, if you've been paying attention, you have, but if you're just a casual observer of the news, what are you doing listening to this? If you're a casual observer of the news, you may have missed the fact that Pete Buttigieg and other Democrats are now pointing fingers at President Trump and assigning him blame for the Iranian missile strike on the Ukrainian airliner. They're saying that if he had not taken out Soleimani, the terrorist, then Iran wouldn't have done the things it has done, and the people on that airplane would still be alive today. That is heart-wrenching. It is gut-wrenching. And it is completely and totally irrelevant. If you're a parent and you punish a rebellious child, and that child acts out in response to your punishment, let's say you send them to their room. Okay, that's it. No more TV for you. No more video games for you. No more whatever they like for you. You go to your room. You're going to be in your room for the rest of the day. Or whatever. You go to your room. You can come out when I tell you so. You can come out when you can apologize. Or whatever standard you set. You know how this works if you're a parent, right? Or you go to the corner. You go, that's right. Just time out. You're in the corner. You face that corner and don't talk to anybody. Well, if you're a parent and you punish this rebellious child, you say, let's say you send him to their room. The child acts out and breaks things. Smashes a lamp, breaks a mirror, whatever, in their room. Are you the one responsible for the damage done by the rebellious child? Is that your fault? No, it's not your fault. The rebellious child made the decision to do damage and to create havoc. The rebellious child did that. A dear friend of mine, okay, my wife and I have these dear friends. I mean, I won't name anybody because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But at one point, they're dealing with a rebellious, a child who is just, you talk about a strong-willed child. They were told by, they were advised by someone who was giving them counsel on how to deal with this child about what to do. They were told when the child begins acting out, don't negotiate, send them to their room. And the longer they object and scream and yell and pitch a fit and carry on, the more stuff you take away. You send them to their room, they sit in there and yell at you or whatever, you go in and you take whatever away from them you need to take. If they've got their favorite thing in the room, you go take that out. They keep screaming, you take the next thing out. And they tell me that at one point, they got to the point where the only thing left in the room was a pillow and a blanket on the floor. But the point is, you do what you have to do, right? You know your child. You have to do what you do. We've watched the situation in Iran for so long, and we know that Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism. We know that this terrorist, Soleimani, orchestrated and designed so many things. He was personally involved in the design and implementation of IEDs that killed and maimed American soldiers. this guy came up with the idea. He's personally responsible for the deaths of over 600 Americans, just Americans, and hundreds and possibly thousands more others. And to say that President Trump is responsible for the deaths of the people who were on that airplane because this guy was finally taken out is a huge stretch and should be considered an insult to your intelligence. Because anyone who has a child understands that when you punish a child and that child acts out, it's not your fault that the child breaks things and destroys things. It's the child who will not assume responsibility for its actions. And we have a government of a nation which will not assume responsibility for its actions. We have a government which lies to the world. And I'm talking about Iran specifically. We also have a government in America that does the same thing to a degree. But in Iran, I go back to the Ami Horowitz video. I posted a link to it on social media. Go look at the Daily Perspective Facebook page. There's a link to that video where Ami Horowitz deals with what's happening in Iran and has been happening for a long time. And the official he interviews on camera, who obfuscates, distracts, and lies about everything. And it's clear. It's so clear that the man is lying. He's lying about everything. Distracting, using political speech. And that is who we've been dealing with. This nation, which puts on a suit, gets all dressed up and spiffed up and looks good on camera and smiles and nods and is amiable and is lying through its teeth. And the mullahs, the religious leaders, the people who are keeping oppression over the people of Iran, a once prosperous, happy, productive nation populated with people who enjoyed life, is now under the heel of religious oppression and a government driven by that religious oppression, which wants to conquer the world and will help Muslim terrorists everywhere do their dirty work. It's not President Trump's fault that those people are no longer with us. It's not the United States' fault in any way, shape, or form. We struck down a vicious animal of a terrorist. And the government which supported him and enabled him, empowered him, and funded his work, lashed out by sending missiles into Iraq, and then shot down a Ukrainian airliner. It wasn't us or anybody here who pushed the button. We didn't make the decision to kill innocent people. That was Iran. And for people like Pete Buttigieg and other Democrats to assert otherwise is just nasty. And that's it for today. I encourage you, unplug this weekend, air out your brain, enjoy yourself, have a good time with friends and family, get recharged, and we'll meet together on Monday to face life again. God bless you. Have a good weekend. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Take the next 2 days off. How's that?